You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome, everybody, and happy Friday afternoon. We've made it through another week of utter lawlessness and chaos.
Of America in 2025,
yeah.
Right,
Maggie? Yes. And that fine voice is my frequent guest, former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel. He hosts the program Amicus or Amicus. Choose your pick. Both are completely acceptable pronunciations from 9 to 11 a.m. on Saturdays across the network. Welcome back, Jim.
Maggie, always a pleasure to be with you, even in a week like this. Rule of law tested, justice tested, so many things. As always, it's a lot. It's not great to be with you once again to talk through all of that.
Yes, indeed. A couple bits of breaking news, and then I will turn to my now daily shutdown update. Mm-hmm. This broke quite a bit earlier today. The New York chapter of the Young Republicans, which was being led by one of these, I think the guy's 35, 36 years old, one of these adults, new generation of leaders, one of these guys in this text exchange that was just vile and absolutely abhorrent. So that's happening, I guess, in on the plus side of the column. Also, a little bit closer to home here, the University of Wisconsin-Platteville, their chancellor announced today that the UW-Platteville Baraboo Sauk County campus will be ceasing operations effective May 22nd, 2026, so next year. It will not impact in-person degree instructional programs at the main Platteville campus. So that interesting in this continued, I'm just going to say, attacks on higher education and education writ large. I saw some reporting earlier this week that said now University of Wisconsin system colleges and programs are among the more expensive. It used to be exactly the opposite here in the state of Wisconsin. That, of course, all due to the concerted multi-decade-long efforts by Republicans, specifically a particular pet project, the defunding of public education of the Koch brothers. That has always been, one of them now deceased, but a lot of their foundation's expenditures into these 501c4s and 501c3s has really been about defunding public education at all levels. We're seeing the results of much of that at primary, secondary, elementary education here in the state of Wisconsin. Also some updates. This is from the Harvard Business School. They just put out a study. It's titled Tracking the Short-Term Price Impact of U.S. Tariffs. The link to that will be in our show notes for today, as well as the chart that sort of summarizes this pretty technical paper that I took some time today to take a peek at. Here's the big shocker, everybody. Prices for pretty much everything have gone up since the tariff terror.
Who would have anticipated that?
I know, right? It's really weird when those pesky economists are right. Here's what the headline, when factoring slowing price increases before March of this year, again, a lot of that work, frankly, tied back to the Biden administration, the 4% jump on imported good prices since then is expected to climb to at least 5.4%. Prices on domestic goods would rise from 2.6% from 2%. So, yeah, the tariffs are adding to our inflation problems. If you don't believe me or the Harvard Business School or, basically any economist worth their measure, the Wall Street Journal, also headline news, this week, just 2 days ago, grocery prices keep rising. And they've got a handy little chart there. And despite all of this, and you know how Republicans always, they use the word socialism and government intervention and markets and business. This is terrible, free market. All that's, of course, nonsense. Because guess what? Donald Trump is going to set price floors across unnamed industries to combat China. This, according to Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent, Also, he noted this week that the administration may try to take equity stakes in more companies. Yeah, that's literally government takeover of markets and businesses.
It is.
Sure sounds like socialism to me, Jim. Mm. Who are the socialists these days?
Right.
It's pretty truly stunning. The two talking out of both sides of their mouths. Before we get to the shutdown update, I also, Jim, and everybody out there, I wanted to do what I'm going to now call the President of Peace update.
Ah, okay, here we go.
Because, yeah, there was absolutely an extraordinary moment yesterday in the Oval Office. Donald Trump had spoken to Vladimir Putin on the phone, I believe earlier yesterday. And what he basically admitted, and you can see his advisors behind him sort of like, oh, God, don't say what you're saying. He admits that Putin told him, do not give Tomahawk missiles to Ukraine. Now, Donald Trump just about a month ago said, especially when, you know, he was ticked off at Putin for that hot second, he said he was going to give the Tomahawks to Ukraine. Here's Donald Trump telling all of us that Putin said, no, don't do that. Take a listen to this. Cut 67.
I did actually say, would you mind if I gave a couple of thousand Tomahawks to your opposition? I did say that to him. I said it just that way. He didn't like the idea. He really didn't like the idea. No, I said it that way. You have to be a little bit lighthearted sometimes, but no, he doesn't want Tomahawk is a vicious weapon. It's a vicious offensive incredibly destructive weapon. Nobody wants Tomahawk shot at him.
Did we ask you not to provide Tomahawks?
So, wouldn't anybody? I mean, it's been in the news. Who wouldn't do that? CNN. Who wouldn't do that? You know?
Do you think
he's
going
to say, I'd love to have Tomahawk sent my way? I don't think so.
And then moments later, I could have almost chalked that up to Trump being kind of a little cheeky about things, but the substance of what he's saying is, I talked with Vladimir Putin, who runs, just let's be clear, an authoritarian state that is an enemy of the United States. Vladimir Putin told me, like, don't give those Tomahawks to Ukraine. And then Donald Trump admitted, apparently based on that request from Putin, that he's not going to give Tomahawk missiles to Ukraine because we need them more. Listen.
About the Tomahawk missiles, did you discuss?
Well, we talked about it a little bit, didn't say much, but I do say to you, you know, we need Tomahawks for the United States of America, too. We have a lot of them, but we need them. I mean, we can't deplete for our country. So, you know, they're very vital. They're very powerful. They're very accurate. They're very good, but we need them, too. So I don't know what we can do about that.
Where do you start with that, Maggie, right? What are the seven things that are wrong with what we just heard between those two cuts? Again, this is a man, again, making cavalier statements, cheeky, absolutely, cavalier statements about war, people dying, and the legitimacy of a republic that, at least up until now, has sort of been our ally over there. We're making fun of all this, and then we're indicating we need it. You know, I think about Portland. I think about Chicago. What is he talking about? Where are we going to be using these weapons, right?
I mean, my take is pretty basic. Trump gets on the phone with former KGB official, spy extraordinaire, now dictator, authoritarian in Russia, and Russian President Putin says, don't send Tomahawks to Ukraine. And Donald Trump says okay, I won't do that.
Right.
So to continue with the President of Peace update, I don't know if this is directly related, but it's somewhat. He's announced, and the New York Times reported this week, that he's considering an overhaul of our refugee system to favor white refugees. So, yep, President of Peace there. That's, of course, on top of the H-1B visa sales for $100,000 apiece. Of course, you all heard this week that he's authorized covert CIA action against Venezuela. Striking another Venezuelan boat, but apparently it wasn't just Venezuelans this week, and two people survived, you know, President of Peace type stuff. They continue to attack President Nicolas Maduro. I'm no fan of that man, But again, all of this is fig leaf cover so that he's not actually committing war crimes by using the military to bomb. Okay, let's just assume they're criminal vessels in the Caribbean. That's a war crime if they're not actually enemy combatants. And this. Trump said today that Israel will, said Israel will resume fighting in Gaza, quote, as soon as I say the word, end quote. Because there have been reports in recent days of clashes that continue between Hamas and Palestinian gangs or clans reportedly backed by Israel? What? And Israel confirmed that it carried out an August 28th attack strike in Yemen.
It's breathtaking, right?
It in is
its
really...
recklessness. The disclosures of these things, these should be matters handled at the State Department, obviously in the West Wing there. They're highly, highly sensitive. And again, the fate of not only our nation, people in places across the globe, and this man hears something and it becomes his musings. Yes, at the top of the list, absolutely. I've been just told by an autocratic leader not to do something, so I'm going to do it. But all of this is not the way a president behaves. And it's not just because that's tradition. It's because all of us should expect more for our own safety and security from this man.
It's
right?
ridiculous.
Right?
Also, all of the reporting this week that basically Donald Trump and his allies had convinced Netanyahu to not accept effectively the same terms that Trump proposed to end this war when Biden proposed them so that Trump could run on the issue and Biden would be hurt by some of the left-leaning factions within the Democratic Party. Yeah, all of that coming out this week. So, president of peace. And just in case anyone had any doubt about his deservedness as the title of president of peace, Donald Trump made this statement yesterday in the Oval Office that nobody's been ending anybody any wars but me. No president ever, not ever. Take a listen to this nonsense.
You're talking about the whole
President Zelensky tomorrow.
It just seems to me that, look, it's only a field. That's all I've done in my whole life. I've made deals. I know about deals. I do it well. I don't think any president's ever ended a war, frankly. One war, I did eight of them, Maria, right? But I don't know. Did Bush ever end? Do you think Biden ended a war? Biden started wars because he was stupid. But do you think Biden ended any wars? No. I don't know of anybody that ended wars. I ended eight of them. Now it's going to be nine. I think we're going to have this one done hopefully soon.
What hogwash. And I just want to take a couple corrections that I appreciate from our texters. I said socialism. No, that's not really what government takeovers of businesses, claiming equity stakes and putting price floors on certain products is. That would be communism. But again, most GOPers don't actually know the difference between the two things. Jim and I are going to take a break. I'm going to be right back. We're going to dive into these insane legal cases this week. The contempt motions, the flouting of court orders. Former U.S. Attorney Jim Santel and me, Maggie Dawn, your lawyer friend on the radio, continue with that discussion next. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. I might save my shutdown update. Suffice it to say, Magic Mike, Jack Hole Johnson, Marionette Mike had a really bad day in the media yesterday. And I mean, really bad day. And I kind of want to do that all in one batch, but it's incredibly important for us to get to what is happening in some of these court cases, especially the court cases that involve the deployment of troops in our cities. Because over this past week, there were just some, and starting last week, Jim, there were just some extraordinary court rulings. And it is just breaking now that the Trump administration is appealing the decision yesterday from the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, which covers Illinois, Indiana, and Wisconsin, our own home circuit court, found that there's no rebellion and that protests, even if they include sporadic violence, don't constitute a rebellion. This isn't shocking. And now Donald Trump is asking the Supreme Court to intervene here. It's pretty scary stuff that we're in. And the case about the National Guard deployments in Illinois, Jim, is probably the most notable. But within the last week and a half, there have been at least two federal courts that have concluded that Donald Trump violated specific restraining orders that prohibited the Trump administration from doing certain things. We'll get to those. But let's start with this case about the deployments. And Jim, I'm going to read for everyone, and then I want to get your reaction to the Seventh Circuit's incredibly matter-of-fact language.
Not mincing words at all, right?
No,
right,
and it's just so straightforward. Yes. And I want to get your reaction to that. Here's the Seventh Circuit yesterday. Again, this is the case brought by Governor Pritzker to stop Donald Trump's deployment of National Guard troops in Illinois. Separately, we will also get into the fact that the Department of Homeland Security and ICE officials continue to lie and manufacture propaganda to try to scare Americans into agreeing with these Gestapo-like tactics that have now snared some 170-plus U.S. citizens and who have seized and disappeared and have slated for deportation of the entire population of people that they're taking. Most estimates, most watchers think that over 60% of those people have no criminal record at all. So it's exactly what he didn't say he was going to do. Here's the Seventh Circuit, though. Let's start with this. Although we substantially agree with the definition of rebellion set forth by the district court in the California case, we emphasize that the critical analysis of a rebellion centers on the nature of the resistance to governmental authority. Political opposition is not rebellion. A protest does not become a rebellion merely because the protesters advocate for legal or policy changes, are well organized, call for significant changes to the structure of U.S. government, use civil disobedience as a form of protest, or exercise their Second Amendment right to carry firearms as the law currently allows. Nor does a protest become a rebellion merely because of sporadic and isolated incidents of unlawful activity or even violence committed by rogue participants in the protest. Such conduct exceeds the scope of the First Amendment, of course, and law enforcement has apprehended the perpetrators accordingly. But because rebellions at least use deliberate, organized violence to resist governmental authority, the problematic incidents in this record clearly fall within the considerable daylight between protected speech and a rebellion. Applying our understanding of rebellion to the district court's factual findings, and even after affording great deference to the president's evaluation of the circumstances, we see insufficient evidence of a rebellion or danger of rebellion in Illinois. The spirited, sustained, and occasionally violent actions of demonstrators in protest of the federal government's immigration policies and actions, without more, does not give rise to a danger of rebellion against the government's authority. The administration thus has not demonstrated that it is likely to succeed on this issue. That language was endorsed by two Republican-appointed judges, one appointed by Donald Trump himself during his first administration, the other appointed by George Herbert Walker Bush. Jim, your reactions, we got about a minute. And then we'll go to the phones on the other side, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Your reactions to that? It is specific.
It is decisive. It's clear. This is not a court that's even saying, you know, there are things on the other side we should talk about, but in the end we balance it. Not even close. Political opposition is not rebellion, Mr. President. And you've got appeals court judges, as you said, from all perspectives on the bench saying just that. We've got them. We know about Judge Imerget also, obviously, in Portland. Yes. Same kind of thing coming from this basic definition and saying no. knock it off. Stop it. And again, the president has a right to appeal these things. This should not be appealed. This is a basic statement about how we live and work in America. Good for the Supreme Court to say just that.
Seventh Circuit. And he is appealing it, of course.
Yep.
We'll see what the knee benders to an authoritarian president do when the Supreme Court decides what to do with the emergency appeal. We're going to take your calls and thoughts on the other side. We're going to dig into these other complete flouting of court orders by the Trump administration next. 855-752-4842. I'm Maggie Dawn, and this is the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back, everybody. There's been so much action in our federal courts, it is nearly impossible to keep track of. I know I now need both hands and both feet to count the number of times, and probably Jim's hands and feet as well, to count the number of times a federal court has concluded that the Trump administration is flouting their orders. There were a couple of cases just this past week. But Jim, I wanted to give our listeners a chance to weigh in on this very clear point made by the Seventh Circuit. Protesting the government is not a rebellion. And if there is not a meaningful distinction between the two of those things, then there is no First Amendment.
Absolutely. And
it's the whole
concept behind the First Amendment, all these cases out there from past Supreme Courts have said that we tolerate not only criticism of the government, but we encourage it in appropriate circumstances. You can say things in the public domain that will be unpopular, that'll be offensive, all kinds of things. That's what the First Amendment. There are limits, absolutely. No defamation. You can't incite violence, all kinds of conditions on it. The First Amendment, this core fundamental notion, the president basically equating saying things out loud with insurrection, with rebellion, not even close. And again, the decisiveness of the Seventh Circuit, right?
Yeah, equating showing up en masse
in the
streets.
With a sign.
With a sign to a rebellion.
Right.
Our founding fathers would literally
recoil
turn over in their graves.
Horror, absolutely.
The other thing that I want to point out before we go to the phones, 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Remember, women, vets, conservatives, and first-time callers go to the front of the line. There was also a very weird moment yesterday in the Oval Office where Trump admits that he never said during his campaign that he was going to sic the military and the National Guard on citizens that might protest his policies, that this is going far, far farther than what he intended. And if you listen closely to what he says, he basically says that this is Stephen Miller's thing, that this is about his truest feelings, and that he almost implies that, like, he's holding Stephen Miller back. It is really creepy. The upshot of this is basically the president going like, yeah, I'm just letting this guy over here turn the First Amendment on its head, abuse our National Guard. This is not what these folks who volunteer to help defend our country from foreign enemies and help with domestic natural disasters. It's not what they signed up to do. Listen to this. It is really creepy.
I didn't realize I was going to make this such a big factor in the administration. I campaigned on crime, but I never thought we'd go into every city and take a really safe city that we've all been living with for years and make them safe. And now it's like a passion for me, and it's a passion for the people behind me. So I didn't get elected. I did get elected for crime, but I didn't get elected for what we're doing. This is many, many steps above. And I want to thank Stephen Miller, who's right back in the audience right there. I'd love to have him. I love watching him on television. I'd love to have him come up and explain his true feelings. But maybe not his truest feelings. That might be going a little bit too far.
Stephen Miller has an office, right?
Yeah. I didn't get elected for what we're doing. This is many levels above that. And I want to just point this out. There are news agencies, including ProPublica. We're going to put in our show notes the article that they just published, 170 citizens detained held incommunicado, some for more than one day, meaning they're not allowed to contact family or lawyers. Many of their family members couldn't find where they are. The vast majority of these people were saying, I'm a citizen, producing real ID or whatever it is. The ICE agents laughing at them, violently detained a huge proportion of them. And meanwhile, the biggest political ad spender this year is DHS. They've spent $51 million on propaganda. And another fact-checking organization found out that this crapola being pumped out by the White House and DHS that showed this like very scary video montage of Chicago and how lawless and out of control it was. It's a fake. That video was littered with old footage that was about drug busts. So old footage that has nothing to do with what's going on, again, about drug busts, and was from deportation raids in other states, including specifically Florida, Texas, South Carolina, and Nebraska, GOP states. So they're lying about this all the time. Here we've got the Seventh Circuit saying even incidental violence when masses of people are exercising their First Amendment rights, this is not a rebellion. Trump admitting this isn't what he got elected to do, but oh yeah, that's Stephen Miller. We don't want him to tell anybody what he actually thinks. What?
And if Mr. President, if you have in your brain some second thoughts, which maybe arguably you're hinting at there, that this has gone too far, you are the president of the United States of America. You are Stephen Miller's boss. You're the president of this nation. You tell your agencies, your law enforcement agencies, Justice Department, Homeland Security, knock it off. We're pulling back. We're
knock
not doing
it
this.
Off.
And you do that right away, and it becomes effective the next moment you say it. You've got that power.
But Jim, you keep saying these things like Donald Trump is rational
and this is normal, and that
he's actually trying to be a president for all Americans when he's not.
And I just
want to point out this last thing, then we're going to go to the phones, 855-752-4842. There is a psychological phenomena that is called secondary delusions, which means you come up with this set of beliefs that explain the primary delusion, like this primary unreal thing that you seize onto. And you see this constantly in MAGA. You see it from the president himself. And this is, I think Trump is experiencing this. He's not trying to fact check anything that Stephen Miller or anybody else is telling him. He just assumes that all of this is true because he doesn't know how to actually ask any probing questions. He doesn't really care about the facts. What he cares about is his own political power and influence. And this is where, like, Stephen Miller spewing all of this nonsense into the president's ear, 4,000 murders in Chicago, shows him videos of Portland burning down. No, it's people in frog outfits, like, singing songs. We got the raging grannies here in Wisconsin. And that creates this primary delusion of the out-of-control cities, right? And then that's supported by the propaganda machine, the $51 million spent by DHS on propaganda. And then the secondary delusion is about explaining and propping up that primary delusion, right? And in this case, it's that the delusion of the chaos or these out-of-control cities, that this is explainable through this weird assumption of some kind of bizarre conspiracy about Antifa and Tren de Agua and Marxists and whatever, Democrat, who knows? But you can see this thing, and it sort of ends up feeding itself constantly, right? And you can't get rid of the primary delusion because now you're buying into the secondary illusion and the things feed each other. And you've got a propaganda machine, which includes OAN and Fox News and all righty-whitey talk radio, just continuously feeding this delusion loop. And it becomes self-reinforcing. And it's why, even when presented with facts, those that are deluded can't actually engage with them. They'll revert back to like the platitudes and the, if this is unsafe, it's about stopping crime. No, it's not. Donald Trump doesn't know a thing about stopping crime. Stephen Miller doesn't know a thing about stopping crime. J.D. Vance doesn't know anything about stopping. They've never done any of that. So that's something I think it's really key for people to keep in mind. I have found it nearly impossible to argue with folks from the right that are diehard for Trump because I can't get them down to any factual level. Because to do so is pulling out one of the major support beams for the entire worldview. And if you do that, the entire thing starts crumbling. And that's just psychologically not something most people's brains will allow them to do because it threatens your psychological existential self. So it's easier to stick with the delusion than it is to grapple with the contrary facts. And we see that every day out of the Oval Office in particular.
Absolutely.
Go ahead, Jim, please.
No, I'm simply going to reaffirm that fundamental notion. We see it in courts. We see it outside of courts as well. The reliance, we've got to be able to rely upon some core facts. And we can dispute what we do about those, how we respond to those. That's what good government's all about, legislative
right.
debate. But again, that notion of cracking through that facade, if you say, as you say, of delusion, that's the problem.
It's really, really difficult. And again, the arguments don't work particularly well. Let's go to the phones. Carmela from Milwaukee. Hi, friend. How are you? Say hi to Jim. What you
hey,
got for
Carmela,
us?
Carmela, how are you?
Hi, very well. Hi, Maggie. Hi, Jim. Well, I have two questions, but of course I have thousands of questions. But
we all have lots of questions, Carmela.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah. Absolutely.
It's mind-boggling. But why isn't the international courts, and I can't remember, is it just called international courts? Why aren't they indicting Trump? I don't know. Would it be war crimes or what he's doing, killing people outside of the U.S.? But that was my first question.
What's
and
your second question?
Was,
go ahead.
Is the federal judges, when they go against Trump, why there are no consequences, nothing happens. So is there a way that they can force the hand? I don't know. I'm confused by that, and I think it might have something to do with the Supreme Court giving him pretty much immunity.
That's a lot of it, right?
So very quickly, there are two primary international courts. There's the International Criminal Court, and there's the International Court of Justice. The International Court of Justice generally deals with disputes between nation states. Okay, or actors that act as if they are nation states. The International Criminal Court literally deals with war crimes. Now, I could spend 2 hours with Jim talking about the origins of the International Criminal Court, but suffice it to say, a lot of it was because of U.S. initiatives following World War II, also in responses to genocide in the former Yugoslavia, in various places in Eastern Europe, as well as Africa. The U.S. helped bring war criminals to trial at The Hague. Coming from that, they created the International Criminal Court. Now, would it surprise anyone that the U.S. has now backed away from, does not support, and will not participate in the International Criminal Court? That is the answer to question number one. Question number two, Carmela, Jim and I are going to talk about on the other side after we take care of some messages, but let's squeeze in a couple more calls. Mark from Prairie du Sac, go ahead, sir.
Yeah, it seems... You know, for Stephen Miller, it seems like he's lived in a right-wing echo chamber for his entire life, that he's never really had any real world experience other than working for right-wingers, and he just feeds on hatred. And for Donald Trump, I mean, what next? Donald Trump is going to decide we'll give Alaska back to Putin because Putin just asks for it?
Yeah, where's the line?
Right, what next indeed, Mark? Right, what next indeed?
We got to take care of some messages. We'll come back, talk about these court orders that are being flouted right and left by the Trump administration. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Well, I promised you that Jim and I would present to you two cases that within the past week have had to have emergency hearing. One of these cases has an emergency hearing that is starting in 8 minutes in San Francisco. And these hearings have been about what? A court issuing an order that says Trump administration, stop doing X. And then the Trump administration the very next day, still doing X. The one I want to start with, because something just happened in the case moments ago, is a case that was filed in the Northern District of California that challenges the Russell Vogt, author of Project 2025, Heritage Foundation billionaire lackey, head of the Office of Management and Budget, Trump guy, who has been firing all of these federal employees during the shutdown. Okay. The court on just 2 days ago, so on Wednesday, the judge hearing that case issued a ruling on Wednesday that said you have to stop doing that. You cannot continue to fire people based on this false assertion that the shutdown enables you or requires you to do so. She wrote this. What the judge did, what is becoming clear is that rifts during a government shutdown are not ordinary rifts. Based on the record before the court, some employees do not even know if they're being laid off because the RIF notices were sent to government email accounts and furloughed employees may not have those. It is far from normal for an administration to fire line-level civilian employees during a government shutdown as a way to punish the opposing political party. But this is precisely what President Trump has announced he is doing by taking to social media on the second day of the shutdown to post, quote, I have a meeting today with Russ Vogt, he of Project 2025 fame, to determine which of the many Democrat agencies, most of which are a political scam, he recommends to be cut. I can't believe radical left Democrats gave me this unprecedented opportunity. The judge continues, the memorandum from the OMB that appears to have initiated the shutdown rifts says the same. She went on to say, if what plaintiffs allege is true, then the agency's actions in laying off thousands of public employees during a government shutdown and targeting those firings at programs that are perceived as favored by a political party is the epitome of hasty, arbitrary, and capricious decision-making. In addition, plaintiffs are likely to succeed on their claim that the firings rest on illegal grounds. She actually pointed this out as well. During that hearing on Wednesday, she said, at the hearing, counsel for the administration refused to answer the question of whether or not defendants' actions are legal, instead saying that the defendants were not prepared to enter to address the merits today. Holy cow. I mean, my goodness. So just earlier today, the Trump administration vowed to comply with the judge's order, but failed to submit any details. And other officials acknowledged that longstanding firing plans may continue to go on. Jim, this is so bad.
It is in so many ways. And this is, again, Susan Ilston goes on to say that the laws don't apply to them anymore. It's your point, obviously, about constitutional crisis. We've got an executive branch simply saying we're not doing that anymore. And your point about competence, could you imagine, Maggie, if you or I were to show up in any court, federal court, state court, municipal court, and say, you know what, I don't know what, I'm not
prepared
to. I
don't know anything about the law.
I don't know about this. And when the judge looks at you or me, would not happen because we would be prepared, and you say, I'm not prepared. That is not a proper response. And it should also be underscored, these are people who are representing the people of the United States of America, right? It is a combination of this intentional flouting that you talked about and incompetence.
Incompetence, lackeyism, willing to sell your integrity to, I don't know, curry favor with people that you think can do good things for you. I don't know what it is. But you don't show up in court for a temporary restraining order hearing and go, I can't talk about the merits. It's the actual thing that temporary restraining orders are supposed to interrogate, which is your likelihood to succeed on the merits. Here's another case. This is about grant conditions that the Trump administration attempted to place on states that receive a variety of federal grants. They basically said, cooperate with our ICE operations or else. The court entered an order back in September saying that basically this is ridiculous. Grant conditions have to be related to the purpose of the grant, and these ICE requirements have nothing to do with these various grants that are about like energy production, building the grid, educate, has nothing to do with ICE enforcement. And just this week, 3 days ago, that judge that entered that order originally in September granted a motion to enforce that judgment because the defendants, this is the judge's order, quote, have done precisely what the memorandum and order forbids, which is requiring plaintiff states to agree to assist in federal immigration enforcement or forgo the award of grants. Defendants' new approach is not a good faith effort to apply with the order. It is a, quote, ham-handed attempt to bully the states into making promises they have no obligation to make at the risk of losing critical disaster and other funding already appropriated by Congress.
Core rule of law stuff. Core rule of law stuff being flouted. Shocking. Shocking in America.
Jim, we've got to do a show where it's just me and you.
Absolutely.
And we just talk about the law stuff.
There is
for a
lot going on. It's a lot, my friend, is it not? But always good to be here and good to wrestle with these things.
Thank you so much, my friend. Thank you to each and every one of you. Don't go anywhere. I'm super excited. We are going to be joined by the former Assistant Secretary for Commerce and Economic Development under three prior presidents. It will be my honor to speak with Alejandra Castillo next. Don't go anywhere. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.